Yeah, it makes a lot of noise and here's a crack already, but yeah, it's still there and it still works, I think.
I don't know, the combination of egg and Nutella is it's very good.
Welcome to the Lost Op podcast and the 12th edition of the Transcontinental Race, supported by our race partners Albion, Apajura, Curve, POC, Supernova, Ride with GPS, and Peak Design. As day 5 dawns at TCO number 12, the bulk of the race is about to find itself in mainland Europe. Robin Gimperla, cap number 1, continues to set the pace, with a several hour gap to the chasing bunch of riders. He'll be looking to reach control point 2 in Slovakia by the end of the day, while those behind him tackle the tricky, occasionally cobbled Parkour 2A. Back in Sweden, the team in Control Car 2 are just boarding a day ferry that will carry them to Poland, along with many other riders in the midpack. And that's where we start, as race reporter Sophie chats to Robin Scourge, Cap 208, who put in one heck of a shift to make this crossing.
So right now I have like 540 kilometers on the course. And at the end, right, I'm sort of all those thoughts that go through your head in such a night is like, why? I mean, you're not racing for first, second, or third at all. I could have just enjoyed it and make it a 2-day trip to the ferry. And for whatever reason, I decided I want to push through. And well, at least here I am.
You said that you asked yourself, like, why?
The why?
Have you find the answer or not?
Well, maybe the why is not to push and enjoy the ride, because at the end, it's. I mean, I take most of my yearly holidays to do that. So I should enjoy it. I shouldn't be done quickly. I should be done actually slowly and enjoy the ride. Yeah.
Because if you start questioning, maybe you might realize that, oh, I could just stop.
Yeah, or I could just take a hotel, right, and take the next ferry that is there. So yeah.
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 But you made it.
I made it.
Sophie and the team board the ferry and make themselves comfortable for a few hours of travelling by boat and not car. Meanwhile, there is another dispatch from Andrew Phillips, Cap 00A, who's struggling to find his why without his pairs partner John.
Since getting off this side, I'm finding motivation a bit of a struggle. Sort of being flat and suburban. Well, not even flat, like false flat, I guess. Recalibrating my expectations for the trip there, and couple that with exchanging the fjords for the cul-de-sacs, I'm feeling a bit uninspired. So I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll stick a headphone in and I'll listen to yesterday's podcast. But when I went to get my headphones out of my frame bag, they weren't there. So I check on my jersey pockets, my saddlebag, and somehow I've lost them. So it's one of those days. That's all right. All you can do is keep the legs turning. Maybe when I've left Norway and I can afford it, I'll buy some new headphones. I did see something on Instagram that cheered me up though, and that was a little social clip of a rider wearing a massive solar panel on his back. Well, things aren't that bad for me yet. I have my power bank and a mains charging plug.
Good morning, everyone. I'm currently in the ferry that's up to Malmo, from Malmo to Poland, and I'm looking for riders. We arrived like an hour before it is set off, so we have a chance to catch riders before they're probably going to go to bed, or maybe if they have a cabin, it would be hard for us to know where they are. So it's quite easy to recognize the cyclists here because they are still wearing their cycling shoes and sometimes their helmet, even on the boat.
Let's hear from some of those riders. First, Sophie speaks to Katharina Wirth, Cap 199.
Was it your plan to take that particular ferry since the beginning, or how do you make decision on the way?
I totally thought I was going to take the ferry tonight, but it went well. I was just yeah, cycling on. And then yesterday in the morning it was still 500 kilometers to come here, but I was like, yeah, I've got more than 24 hours, so I can totally make it. I even slept 2.5 hours. So
it's funny to say, like, I think that people listening hearing you saying like, oh, I just had like 500 kilometers to do in 24 hours, that's fine. Like, I think it's something,
it was more than 24 hours, so yeah. I'm not that fast, but I think I can go for quite long hours and I don't need a lot of sleep. That is my big advantage, I think.
And maybe, are you efficient in your breaks?
Yeah, I think, I mean, now I've taken a shower, my stuff is about to be in the laundry, I've eaten, I'm like all set in my room, I've got the food for the next in Poland already, so I think that's what I'm good at, and I can make up for my slower speed.
It's funny, you really have all everything like in your mind, like really clear. That's impressive.
Yeah, I think that helps me a lot because I know where every supermarket is. I don't need to look. I know, okay, if I bike past here, the next one is in 50k, and then I have to go there because otherwise it's too late or something. So that's,
you have a table for all that.
You've done
your work.
I've done my work and it's been a lot of.
Bjorn Amdahl, Cap 186.
How is it going? You made it to the ferry.
Yeah, I did. I went the whole night. So yesterday was from Sarpsborg across the Swedish border, and the whole way here.
How do you manage like the decision process on the way? Like, is it hard to make a decision, like which ferry to take, where to stop, when?
No, I'm used to it. I knew this will come, so I better have no plans. Actually, easier than to take day by day. So yeah, no plans more than a day.
But when you had to book that ferry, you kind of had to imagine like how many kilometers you had left.
Yeah,
so
that's right. Yeah, so I saw on my time schedule that I could reach this one without pushing a lot, because that I don't want to do. So I want to have fresh legs the whole way.
We've said it so many times, but riding the TCR is often as much about planning and decision making as it is riding a bike. In fact, for Michael Ehrenlund, Cab 187, that's the biggest challenge of all.
The decisions is really difficult for me, I think. It's definitely what's the hardest for me in this. It's riding the bike is the easy part.
Yeah.
So,
do you have problem making decision in your everyday life, or it's just...
Yeah. I have ADHD big time. And... So the whole planning was also a bit last minute, and everything was a bit of chaos. But I have a route, and I have so far pretty much stuck to it. So that has worked out, except from the ferries, of course. But I think that's in my advantage so far. So,
like, did you had any experience on racing before?
I've done a 4-day ultra once, like 1.5 months ago, and I think. The thing where I'm really bad at sticking to my plan is stopping when I had originally planned to do, so I keep pushing because I'm like getting at the end of the day and like, I have plenty in the tank, let's push some more. So I got pretty quick to the first checkpoint as well, and then the next day I was just ruined. So the day after the parkours, and I did CP1 on the parkours, and then the day after it was just a horrible day. Really awash, and this is me trying to make up for it, so now I'm ahead of my schedule again.
Ultra riders are not known for their balanced diet while racing, but Christoph Sabel, Cap 357, shows it's perfectly possible to find and consume all the necessary food groups.
Can you explain us a bit what is your breakfast situation here?
No, I don't want to do this, no.
You're afraid they're going to laugh at you again?
I just, I don't know, the combination of egg and Nutella is it's very good. It's very tasty.
Alright. It's good that it's all you can get buffet, no?
That's perfect.
Yeah, it's good for us, not good for them.
Alright, I'll let you enjoy your sausage topped with Nutella on top.
Thank you very much.
One thing you've probably noticed is that TCI runners seem to survive our Coca-Cola, pastry, chocolate bar, and gummy bears. It doesn't look exactly like elite sport nutrition. So, time for another Sophie Explains, why so much sugar? To answer that, we need a quick anatomy tour of our digestive system. When you eat, food doesn't go straight into your muscle. First, it travels down your oesophagus into your stomach. From there, think of your digestive system as a production line. The stomach is the mixing room. Here, food is mixed with digestive juices and broken down into smaller pieces. Once it's ready, the stomach gradually releases small amount of that food into the small intestine. The small intestine is the loading dock of your production line. This is where most nutrients, including carbohydrates, are absorbed into the bloodstream. Once they are in the blood, they can finally reach the muscle and be used to produce energy in your muscles so you can pedal. Food is made of carbohydrates, protein, fat, and fiber. Carbohydrates, especially simple sugars, are relatively easy to digest, so they usually move through the stomach quite quickly, and this is also what you find it in big quantity in gels, bars, sodas. The proteins take longer to break down, the fats take even longer, slowing down how quickly the stomach empties, and then there are the fibers. We cannot digest most fiber ourselves, instead they slow the movement of food through the digestive system and reduce how quickly carbohydrates are absorbed. So during everyday life, that's actually a good thing. It keeps your energy levels more stable and helps you stay full for longer. But during an ultra-distance race, riders want exactly the opposite. They want carbohydrates reaching their muscles as quickly as possible, because here's the fascinating part. Your stomach isn't the bottleneck, your intestine is. No matter how much food you eat, your intestine can only absorb a limited amount of carbohydrates every hour. A TCR riders can burn between 6 to 10,000 calories every day. But while riding, the digestive system simply cannot absorb energy fast enough to keep up. They are almost always riding in an energy deficit. A part of that is that during prolonged exercise, the body sends more blood to the working muscles and to the skin to help cool itself down. That means less blood is available for the digestive system. Digestion slows down and heavy meals become harder to tolerate. So riders eat little and often, not because they are hungry all the time, well, maybe a bit, but because they are trying to keep that production line, that is the digestion, running at full capacity. All that doesn't mean riders live on sugar alone. Carbohydrates are the priority because they provide the fastest fuel during the race, but the body also needs protein to repair and rebuild muscles after hours of riding. So while a gel might keep you moving, a proper meal is still an important part of recovery and fueling. So next time you see a rider with another ice cream, they are probably not treating themselves. They are racing two battles at the same time, one against the rider and one against their own digestive system. Bon appétit!
Maximilian Pal, Cap 318, is pleased to have pushed and made it to the ferry. He's also keen to remember the importance of looking up and taking it all in too.
Do you know how many kilometers you've done?
I think 1,600 by now, yeah. But I'm really relieved to have made it that far. Yeah.
With it, yeah. You didn't believe you could?
I did, but not that everything was going flawlessly and in time, and just today I remembered to look at things around you, and there was a good hint to myself to like keep on absorbing the environment, because it's a little danger to forget about doing that when you're like, I don't know, in your own little cave of cycling. I think I would just want to keep enjoying it, want to keep not hurting myself, want to keep rolling, and rolling with the punches. I don't know, yeah. And look around.
While some riders have meticulously planned routes and schedules concocted months in advance, flexibility is also a useful skill once you're on the race. Lisa Brugelmans, Cap 177.
When did you book that ferry?
Maybe 8 a.m. this morning.
For 11 departure.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I could make it. I didn't want to put too much pressure on myself. So I was like, okay, I keep going and see how I go. And when I was sure I could make it, I booked it. So yeah, I'm really happy now.
What is your next goal now? Now that you've reached the ferry?
The next parcours in Czech Republic and then the one in Slovakia. So I've been to Czech before, but not to Slovakia, so I'm really looking forward to the mountains and have a look. So, see how I go from there. Maybe I can do it on the Sunday or something, so it's you know, the restriction with the trails, it was a bit tricky, so I think it's quite good timing now. Let's see how we go. I have different options planned for the route, so yeah.
You said that you have like many like different plans. How do you make the decision on the spot? Like, do you find it difficult?
I see how I go. I make it most of the time quite spontaneously because I don't want to put too much pressure and make like forward plans that and then you don't meet the plans or the expectations, and so I just see how I go.
As the ferry carrying Control Car 2 chugs and parps its way across the Baltic Sea, race reporter Jake and the team in Control Car 1 are stationed at the end of Parkour 2A. They are expecting the leading bunch of riders behind Robin to pass through today. Here's Jake with more information.
So this is the first bit of a split parkour. Second bit will come later on in Slovakia. But this section basically takes riders up a fairly sort of deteriorating track through forested hills, up over two mountains, finishing at the top of Praded, which is the great-grandfather of these Jasniki mountains that we are currently in. The track basically just gets worse as you climb. Starts off a little bit shallower on tarmac, and then it sort of rakes upwards and gets worse, deteriorates through gravel, boardwalk, and eventually to these sort of like flagstones, basically the Czech Paris-Roubaix. But it's forcing a lot of riders to dismount. It's pretty tough going, but they are rewarded. The views are absolutely incredible from up here, and riders are unanimously in pretty good spirits so far, despite the tough ride up here. So I'm standing here up on the end of Parkour 2A, waiting for our second rider on the road, Jonas, to come through. Jonas has absolutely torn through the race over the last couple of days, having taken a tactical ferry from Ystad rather than from Trelleborg to guarantee him a cabin.
Shortly after, Jonas Verest, Cap 368, does indeed come through, but not without stopping for a quick update.
You're making absolutely storming progress, Jonas, after your ferry. It was a tactical ferry choice, wasn't it, to get a cabin?
Yeah, but I think the other guys, they all rushed a bit to have this Trelleborg ferry, the other four. And I didn't really want to do that. You know, they went through the night without sleep or just an hour just to get this 2-hour head start. So I think it was a bit too early to burn some unnecessary matches for a 1 hour 45 head start.
And so, you know, you're now second on the road. What's your plan for reeling in the front runner, Robin Gemfeller?
Honestly, I think if it doesn't do any critical mistakes, I don't think there's really a reeling in for now. Because that would mean cutting on sleep, and it's too early to do that. With the Balkans are still going to be long. So I'm just going to do my thing, same thing every day until Sarajevo, and we'll see in the Balkans what's to play for, depending also where the chases are, what Robin's doing until then. So we'll see. But nothing special for the next 3 days. Just stop at the same time every day, sleep for the same hours every day, and just try to keep making some steady progress.
Another leading rider is Robert Muller, cap number 37, whose AeroBurt bike, with its dome-like hood, has captured the attention of dot watchers.
How was the parkour?
Yeah, I was walking and I thought, at least no one sees me. But then, of course, there was Thomas, the photographer.
We always get caught out at these moments.
Yeah.
How's AeroBurt holding up on the tricky gravel?
Yeah, it makes a lot of noise and here's a crack already.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, it's still there and still works, I think.
Nice.
I slept outside for about 3.5 hours, just at some... I don't know, there was a wall, and then I found under a big foil,
yeah,
there was thousands of empty packages where you pack sugar, the paper packages of sugar.
Really?
Thousands, empty ones.
So you slept on that, like a mattress?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I used this as a mattress, and I made a pillow out of it for my head. So I didn't have to use my own mattress.
That sounds like a sweet night's sleep.
Yeah, and it worked fine. So,
Martin Moritz, cap number 2, seemed to struggle through the first few days of the race. You wouldn't think it, though, as he remains right at the front with this leading group.
Oh, well, how are you doing, Martin?
Ah, way better.
Mate, last time I saw you at CP1, I wasn't sure whether you'd be in the race at this point.
Yeah, me neither. I was, the mountain before the checkpoint and the one afterwards, so the Parcours 1B, they nearly broke me. And I'm so happy I have good friends at home cheering me up and telling me to keep fighting. And I'm glad I'm here.
Is that the difference then? It's the support from home that's changed your internal landscape.
Definitely, definitely.
Wow. And so what's the plan now? I mean, you're fourth on the road at the moment.
I'm going to have something really good to eat, and then I'm going to crack on. And it's not even halfway point yet, but it finally feels like bike riding again. And that's the most amazing feeling.
How does it feel finally to be back in the mountains?
Awesome. How do you call it? Well, my bum is loving it. It needed a change, especially after those roads in Poland.
Last year, Nicolas Châtelet, Cab 126, flew out of the blocks and led the early part of the race before eventually falling back. This year, he's right in the mix and going strong, despite an unscheduled stop to replace a cracked computer.
Hey, Nicolas.
Hey,
how are you?
Good. And you?
Yeah, I'm well. Are you enjoying the parkour?
Yeah. Just a few kilometers with big rocks. Not good, but all the other is perfect.
And how is the Wahoo?
It's my new GPS. I don't have the map installed on. I just have...
Oh, just the line?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's an expedition.
That's hard.
Oh, it's good. When I have a duped, I use my phone and it's good.
Okay, nice. And now you're making progress through the day. You're moving quickly. How was your sleep?
Yeah, I make a very big sleep this night. 6 hours because I'm tired. And I can push today. Yeah. It's so good.
You look quick. I'll leave you to it. Yeah. I'll see you in a bit, Nicolas.
So, Jakub Tomasik has just passed the 22-year-old Polish rider. He's been weaving his way ahead just through a school group outside the chalet where I'm based, catching riders at the end of Parkour 2A. Jakub told me that he is aiming for an 11-day race finish, placing him squarely in the leading aspirations in the journey from Trondheim to Kalamata. So Jakub has obviously, for those of you following his social media, he has ridden to the start of the TCR this year. So covered 2,500 kilometers before even setting off from the start line, bivvying along the way from his home in Poland to the start line in Norway. He said he was riding most of his route basically in reverse, so it was essentially an extended recce. But it was amazing to see him moving so powerfully, so quickly, even with 2,500 kilometres already in his legs.
Time to head back to the Baltic Sea and race reporter Sophie.
A bit of a ferry story. So we are in Kontrolgam number 2. We are in on the ferry from Malmo to Poland. It starts at 11 and we arrive around half past 7. So it's quite a long ferry. It's a day ferry. Basically, we are with 15 riders now. They all went to bed now. So I have time to tell you what's going on around here. Basically, when they all arrived, they sorted their stuff, washed their clothes, got an all-inclusive breakfast, all-you-can-get breakfast at the buffet. And I must say, riders were really happy. I'm not sure the boat was that happy about it, but that's how it is. Charging stuff and calling some friends and family. And it's funny to see how some riders like did all that in like 30 minutes, half an hour, like get all their stuff like sorted like really fast so they could go to bed as soon as possible and get like as much sleep as possible, while other riders were taking it a bit more relaxed, maybe hanging out a bit to chat with other riders, and probably like
taking a bit, time to relax after being in a rush for so long, because some had to push really hard the last day to get here on time. A well-deserved a bit chilling time before going to bed and get as much sleep as they can.
While it doesn't exactly come in the middle of the race, the Baltic ferry crossing does provide a significant physical and mental milestone. Sophie speaks to Byron Book, Cap 212.
Was it a good recess, the ferry?
Oh, so good. Like 6.5 hours solid sleep. Amazing. And two massive meals. Some of us were saying it's like having a neutralised zone in the middle of the race. Like we can just stop. It's the first time in 5 days I haven't even had to think, oh, I should be back on my bike, or I should be sleeping, or I should be doing something.
We can just sit there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can just like relax, eat some food, get proper sleep, and get going. So next time I want like a 24-hour ferry. That would be much better. But yeah, no, it's really good. So feeling good to go again. Hope all the body parts hold up. So yeah, all good. Yeah.
It smells like the soap. Have you been like washing your clothes?
I had my laundry done a couple of nights ago, so maybe it's still fresh. But I've done like 550k of cycling since then, so probably not. So that must be someone else. Yeah. No, I don't think I smell that good. I'll take the compliment though.
Yeah, take it. Take as much as you can.
It's easy to get carried away with daily race goals, reaching control points and pushing hard to catch a ferry. But for many riders, just taking part in TCR is an ambition come to life. Gabriel Delatre, Cap 27.
I can see on your background of your phone you have a picture. Can you describe what the picture says?
This picture is when I received the confirmation that I was took.
You had a spot at TCR, yes. Number 12.
Yes.
Why did you put it in your
Lots of emotions.
Why did you put it in your screen?
Each day, each time I open my phone, I can see this. Yes, it's a dream. So let's take it, and that's why I have to stay focused. Sometimes it's hard, but during this last 6-7 months, I train hard. So let's do this. And when it's difficult, remember that it was also difficult. The training was also difficult. So, and to know why I do this.
Why was it a dream to write TCR?
When you are following last year, the dots, you see, wow, how many kilometers they are doing. And to listen their stories, all those things. You want to take part to this.
Andrew Phillips, Cap 00A, and now our lone man on the road, is taking the occasional time out to chat to some of our race partners. While in Sweden, Andrew catches up with Damien Phillips from POC, who, not coincidentally, happens to live in Sweden.
Once you've been here for a while, or any Swede you talk to, there's always this thing about lagom. You might have heard that word a few times already, which means just enough. Essentially, it's a bit like, you know, the porridge, you know, just being perfect. When it's just right, it's lagom, you know, it's just enough. And you shouldn't need to do anything beyond that. So sometimes it's a strange kind of attitude to have, maybe, but everybody believes that if you've got enough, that's enough.
You say lagom, is that?
Yeah.
But so that seems very relevant for the transcontinental, really, doesn't it? Because the best we can hope for every day as riders is just enough food,
exactly.
Just enough sleep, just enough rest, just enough charge in my power bank, you know, whatever it is. We're all getting by with lagom, because it's not just about how you experience something in the moment. It's how you feel about it afterwards, because ultimately your memories will last much longer than the experience.
Let's head back to the front of the race, where Jake and the team are still perched outside a restaurant at the end of Parkour 2A. Later, they plan to pop on the afterburners to try and finally track down and speak to race leader Robin Gimperla. First though, Cap number 3, Tim De Vitter, stops for a quick chat.
How are you feeling since the ferry? Because I saw you were in quite good spirits then. You were well ahead of schedule, right?
What? I was on schedule, maybe ahead. Yeah, I discovered I'm really not a flat road cyclist.
like on the flat roads, everybody is for some reason so much faster. Maybe I have the aerodynamics of a bag of potatoes or something. I don't know why, but yeah, I kind of get in the tuck position and I kind of go backwards. But then when it goes up, then yeah, I am prevailing a bit better. I had some problems with my leg. Suddenly, like probably because I was too much in the tuck position, like there was no blood or the nerve was blocked or something, and it was so painful. I barely could move my leg. I had to stop for half hour just to like let it rest and let the blood flow. And now I'm not going in the aero bars anymore. I try to stand up or sit up nicely, and I hope it doesn't come back.
And you live in Czechia, right?
Yeah, about 150 kilometers from here, more to the south. Yeah.
How does it feel being back at home?
Lonely. I hoped for a lot of supporters, but yeah, apparently I shouldn't wish for that.
Another rider to arrive at the end of Parkour 2A, Manuel Rudaz, cap number 4.
You're making absolutely storming progress through the field at the moment.
Yeah.
What's changed?
I was so bad at the beginning. I killed my knees on the first night and the cold, and yeah, it took me 2 days to recover my knees. So now I'm feeling a lot better, yeah.
Yeah, I'm back into the mountains now.
Yeah, and the mountains, that
How
makes me
happy.
How does it
feel to be back climbing?
It's more better than the flat road, so. For sure. For me, it's better like this.
But not the easiest terrain, hey Manu?
No. These big stones here. Yeah.
They're kind of crazy.
It's it's attractive. It's a little game. We have to be technical on it.
Yeah, it's definitely demanding.
Yeah.
And how are your energy levels then, Manu? How are you feeling at the moment in the race?
I don't know. I'm feeling quite well, I think. And I hope it will increase, but I'm not sure.
Are you checking tracking at all, or are you just...
I checked the tracker yesterday.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Happy?
I'm happy because I'm again with the group. Because at the first day I was like half a day behind. So yeah, it's quite, satisfying, but I will keep doing my thing. That means just keeping it easy and for me, focus on me and my trip and not on the others.
As evening falls on day 5, Control Core 1 departs from the parkour, a hire car shaped hawk in pursuit of a particularly nippy robin, who's making his way to Parkour 2B and Control Point 2 in Slovakia. After a long drive, they try to intercept Robin in an attempt to take a photo, maybe even grab a few words, or, at the very least, catch a glimpse. After some missed opportunities and second-guessing, eventually they spot him. Robin Gimperla, cap number 1, bike on his shoulder, up to his knees in cold, flowing water.
What are you doing here, Robin?
Huh?
What are you doing here?
So, in my understanding of the rules, you're not allowed to walk on that bridge because that's a forbidden road.
Okay.
And there's no curb and nothing. I mean, you could kind of find a curb and say it's a curb, but it's not a curb. And the thing is that the bridge down there, it's being rebuilt.
Okay.
At least last week it was. Maybe now it's done. But so my plan was always either walk next to that other part there, which is obviously not a separation, but it's like it's like building stuff in order to fix the missing rail, handrail. So I thought plan B would always be to make a river crossing. And I am kind of good at river crossing at this point after Silk Road.
So a bit of sleep now, and then a couple of alarms set so you don't oversleep.
Oh, you saw that? Yeah, it's good. You know, what's the worst is now it's like they're not completely far away, but they're still like totally manageable, which makes the next 5 days hard because of that.
I mean, I'm now also here talking, blah, blah. Otherwise, I would be in a rush.
I know.
But now I'm like, I could also have a good time, which makes it more difficult in the long run. So
kind of
that could be the way to catch me. Just tell you to always distract me. then I get fed up of cycling.
After all the excitement, Jake and race director David reflect on the day's racing.
So, David, exciting end to the day, hey? Tell us what's happened.
It's been a great day, yeah. We've been up on Parkour 2A in Czechia. So this is the first of a two-part parkour. Now riders have reached mainland Europe. We have seen the leading top 10 or so riders all come through over the course of the day. But we have been out on the gravel section of that parkour. So there's kind of two climbs within it. The first one takes riders up to this beautiful reservoir up at the top, which they ride the circumference of, for dropping back down to the valley floor and then climbing up again on a road. Starts as nice tarmac. That tarmac then degrades. It becomes gravel. It becomes slightly trickier gravel. Until it becomes like slabs of rock near the top. But we were based in a little mountain lodge right at the top, being served piping hot, hearty meals all day by some very hospitable Czech staff, which was great. And all the riders seemed happy to stop by for a quick chat on the way up before they summited at Prajed, where the large antenna is up at the top. It's felt like a really productive day overall, and really nice to hear so many different kind of stories and insights and perspectives from all of the riders passing through.
Time for the recap of the day. Today was all about the ferry on our side. This morning we boarded the ferry from Malmö to Poland alongside around 20 other TCR riders. Not quite sure what they enjoyed more. It was the bed in their cabin for like 8 hours or the all-you-can-eat breakfast buffet. They looked like kids arriving in Disneyland when they saw the food, and apparently Nutella on top of eggs is a thing. Many riders pushed hard to make that ferry, and after several long days on the bike, many also found themselves asking the same question: why am I doing this? Some of them still haven't found their answer, but now they have completed roughly a third of the race, so they still got the two-thirds of the race to figure it out. Gopsy Girl moment.
Gossip Girl is real?
Paul Jennings, cap 4168, posted a picture of himself with the simple caption: smells worse than it looks. Let's just hope Damien Ludlow, his partner, is riding in front when they draft. Nicole Van Battenburg, cap 29, made every TCR rider nightmare grocery mistake, buying a zero sugar soda, especially when you're racing a ferry. But she made it with 7 minutes to spare, so piece of advice: don't ever stand between her and a ferry. Today's bravery badge doesn't go to a TCR rider. Instead, it goes to a man many people consider one of the pioneers of bicycle travel and an inspiration to generations of bikepackers and ultra-distant riders. Heinz Tschucker, who passed away 2 days ago at 85 years old. Tonight, we would like to honor his life. In 1962, Heinz left Germany planning a one-year bike trip. He didn't stop riding for the next 51 years. He cycled more than 600,000 kilometers through almost every country in the world on a three-speed bicycle. During an interview, someone once asked him why he had spent so much of his life traveling by bike. He answered, in a sense, "I wasn't chasing a record, I was simply curious about what was around the next corner." Today we've heard several riders talking about their why. Maybe Heinz has given here a part of the answer. Not every ride needs to be about winning. Sometimes curiosity is enough. Mr. Heinz, may you have tailwind up there. Tonight we are in Poland, driving through the part of the night to arrive tomorrow on Parkour 2. Enjoy riding your bike. It's a privilege to do it. Good night and good ride, everyone.
Remember, you can read Jake's daily race reports from the road on the Lost Dot website and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Albion, Apadura, Curve, POC, Supernova, Ride with GPS, and Peak Design.